We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
The Chicago Bulls select Kobe White.
LaVine with the runway.
Get up or get out the way, Trae Young.
Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bulls podcast. We're on the Blue Wire Network. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. As always, I'm here with Jason Pat. And Jason, finally, the Cash Considerations locker room curse is dead. It seems like every single time we try to talk about a Bulls game after the game on this app, the Bulls get crushed. This happened from the very first game of the season. It has continued happening. But tonight in, Jason, dare I say, a must-win game for the Bulls against an Indiana Pacers team without Malcolm Brogdon, without Domantas Sabonis, the Bulls come out, they get the job done. A 113-97 victory for the Bulls moves them to 21-28 on the year. This was the best example we've seen so far of, I think, the vision since adding Nikola Vucevic. Vucevic had an incredible game, 32 points, 17 rebounds, 5 assists. The offense was running through him. He was not particularly efficient. Got up 29 shots. How about that today? I wonder how many times Zach this season has even eclipsed 29 shots. But, you know, he was putting in some major work. He already had like 10 or 11 boards by halftime. His passing was great today. I thought he was looking for cutters on the weak side, cutting baseline out of the high post. And in terms of his scoring, I think you saw the full package. You saw him go 4 of 7 from three, which was nice because, for his first few games on the Bulls, he kind of had a rough start shooting behind the arc. Finally got to see a few threes fall for him today. He had the post up going. It was a lot of mid-range action. And on a night when Zach LaVine, again, was not at his best, LaVine 19 points on 6 of 18 shooting, he has not looked like himself since the Vucevic trade went down. I think the ankle is still bothering him a little bit. But the Bulls had enough to get it done tonight. They needed to win. I didn't want to celebrate this win too much when I was watching on Twitter, just because when you're playing a team without a Pacers team without Brogdon and Sabonis, like, that's just a game where you have to make it a no-doubter, right? Like, you can't play down to the level of competition when you're going against, TJ McConnell and Doug McDermott, guys who have given him some trouble this year. But the Bulls didn't do that. They pretty much had this game as a blowout into the third quarter. They finished off the job, and, yeah, Bulls win. So, Jace, how you feeling after this big victory?
They definitely had to win this game, basically. When, as you mentioned, missing the Pacers aren't good to begin with. Even like healthy, they're decent, but like not that good. Missing their two best players, and then Turner got hurt. What was it, the third quarter, second quarter? I think he sprained his ankle. The Pacers got off to like a decent start, but then the Bulls kind of took control. And you mentioned the Vucevic and like the vision there. Vucevic just a dominant game. We saw just like the passing, just the huge, just the upgrade with the passing and the ball movement. With him passing out of the post, I know one of the these stats that have been going around lately, people have been talking about is like the Bulls just like increasing the offense from post ups. And a lot of times, like, oh, like post ups aren't great, they're not efficient. But like when you have a dude like Nikola Vucevic who can post up and can also pass out of the post, you also have Thad Young's really good at doing that as well. You can see how it can help the offense. And just like playing inside out, we saw Vucevic scoring inside out. 14-29 from the field. He had 4 3-pointers. He had the 5 assists. He dominated on the glass. The Bulls just dominated in general on the glass against a smaller Pacers team with no Sabonis. 14 offensive rebounds. They had a bunch going early, getting second chance points. Like you mentioned, yeah, Zach has not been great. He did not shoot well again. He had a few really nice moments. He had that sequence at the end of the first half with a big dunk and then a 3-pointer. He did have 6 assists. He was a plus 16. So even though he didn't shoot the ball very well, like they played well with him on the court. This was just like a really nice team game where they didn't really mess around. Like I said, the game was close early, but then they took control in the second quarter. They blew it open in the third quarter. The fourth quarter was kind of trash, but it was mostly garbage time. And it was just a full team effort. We mentioned Vooch and Zach, but then we got Thad Young at 14, 7, and 5. Patrick Williams had 10 points and 4 steals. He was all over the passing lanes. Satoransky, after his big game against the Nets, where he kind of outplayed Kyrie Irving. He did not have a huge game today, but I mean, he was totally fine. And even off the bench, like Lowry did well off the bench. He had 15 and 6. He hit his 3 or 4 from three just in only 22 minutes. It was kind of a smaller role. I think that 20 to 25 minutes, I think, is good for Lowry at this point. I think you don't want to overextend him. We see what happens when you overextend him, especially in the wrong matchups. He gets his ass kicked. Today, I think this was against a depleted team. Lowry took advantage of the good looks that he got, and he hit them, 15.6 rebounds. And even Kobe did pretty well today, 13 and 6 assists, 5 and 9 from the field, plus 14. Didn't have any turnovers, or he had one turnover. I know like last game against TJ McConnell, he had some issues just handling the ball. I think right at the start, TJ McConnell like ripped him a few times. But to get solid just off the bench, a couple performances there. We saw Troy Brown Jr. play some nice defense. He was a plus 15. Troy Brown's shooting is pretty brutal. He shot a three-pointer off the side of the backboard, an open corner three. But I think one other interesting thing that I pointed out was I think Billy Donovan's rotation was almost more like a playoff-esque rotation today. He basically went 8 deep. He did go to 9 with Denzel in the first half. Denzel played like 2 first-half minutes, had a terrible turnover, got burned twice on defense, and then Billy was like, all right, get the fuck out. Like, I'm going back to our guy. So they were basically running an 8-man rotation with Lowry, Troy Brown Jr., and Kobe White off the bench, which I think is probably the ideal that we want to see. Denzel can get spot minutes if he's making shots. But when he's bad, Billy pulled him today, and that was great. And Troy Brown Jr., again, his offense is not great, but we've seen some of the defensive impact he made in that Nets game, which I did not see the Nets game. That was on Easter, and I just was not watching Bulls basketball that day. But followed some of the game on the phone and listening to it and looking at the box score. Troy Brown Jr. did a nice job on Kyrie Irving that game. So like he can get minutes with playing deep, strong defense, and we saw that again today. So just overall, just a really solid team effort tonight and in that Nets game. I know both games against teams missing their key guys. The Nets didn't have KD or James Harden. The Pacers, as mentioned, didn't have Malcolm Brogdon, Sabonis, and then Miles Turner got hurt. But that's what you got to do. You got to win these games. You say it's like a must win. Yeah, this was basically a must win game, and the Bulls took care of business and beat the ass of a team that deserved to get their ass beat because this version of the Pacers is crap. So they took care of business, and that was great to see.
Yeah, I was going to mention the short rotation. Like, Billy definitely did not want to blow this game in the third quarter. I think that it was sort of nice. You had Kobe as the one guard off the bench. Markkanen is the one big off the bench. And then Troy Brown was playing in the first half. I always enjoy all of the Troy Brown minutes. But I feel like there's been so much frustration with Kobe and Lowry this year because, you know, under the Garpax administration, those were the guys who were really carrying the franchise on their shoulders. One of the nice things about the Vukovic trade is like now you have two legit primary options on the offensive end, and everyone else can just kind of pick their spots a little bit better. I thought, you know, Markkanen had been being used at small forward to accommodate Daniel Theis as much as possible, but Theis missed this game. So Markkanen is back to, you know, playing all his minutes in the front court, and I just thought he looked a lot better. Markkanen goes 5 of 7 today, goes 3 of 4 from deep, 15 points. So, like, yeah, Lowry Markkanen as a guy who can just be a dude who comes off the bench, gets some shots up. I think that is a really good role for him. Yeah. Same thing with Kobe White. As I've said on this podcast before, I do not want Kobe White making a decision on the basketball floor that is more difficult than catch ball and shoot ball when he has to, like, read the floor. That's when he gets himself into trouble. And it was kind of funny that on a night when the ball movement was really noticeable for the Bulls, like you said, 28 assists, they were killing it with the ball movement. Kobe still like missed some pretty easy passes in this game, I thought, where he chose to drive. And it worked out for him a couple times. He got to the foul line or finished at the rim. But You know, sometimes
Stacey King called him out for that on one. He missed. Lowry was wide open. One more swing pass. Lowry was wide open. He drew a foul on it, but Stacey was still calling him out for it. I think that was probably one of the ones that you noticed because it was very obvious.
Yeah. But, you know, Kobe, if he could even be a third guard, dude, two more years on his rookie scale contract, I think that he would really have to improve. And through his first 2 years in the NBA, he hasn't really improved. And I think that that is sort of the frustrating thing about him. I mean, you could talk about the change in his role this year, trying to, you know, be the starting point guard at the start of the season. But if he could just give them solid third guard level play off the bench, 2 years left on a rookie deal, maybe you flip him. The guy's no savior. Hopefully he's not a total bum either. Hopefully he's not going to be someone who we're looking at is a bust, you know, a couple of years from now, and in a redraft, you know, 5 years from now, even you're looking at someone who shouldn't have been picked in the top 20. I truly want to believe he can at least be a decent third guard off the bench. He's got the size to play either position. He's got the shooting, which you need. So it was good to see Lowry and Kobe for once actually have a decent game for them. And I think that just having someone like Vucevic and then, of course, Zach to carry the offensive load makes their lives a little bit easier. And that goes especially for Patrick Williams, who has been pretty damn good since the Vucevic trade. He's still in a very low usage role. We can talk about that moving forward. I think that, you know, just him showing that he can still impact the game at a higher usage is going to be the biggest thing for him coming into his next season. But, you know, Vucevic makes his life easier too. So we got Kevin on here, C-Red Kev, joining us on the locker room app. C-Red Kev, what up? And how you feeling? Pretty good Bulls win today. Probably one of the more satisfying wins of the year, I would say.
Yeah.
It was against a bad team.
Yeah, no, I mean, you can't be mad at it. I mean, if they had lost this game, it would be, you know, a huge problem just because of the race with the Pacers. They have the chance to potentially get past them here. That game was essentially worth two wins in the standings because it gave them a loss and boosted the Bulls up with another win. And but yeah, I mean, you can't really complain about beating the team that's in front of you. And they still don't really put their foot completely on the throat of teams when they have them down, which, you know, that I think is going to take some time, especially, you know, you're working in new guys. Before I would have chalked that up to, you know, the team just being really young and not having enough guys that know how to win or how to play like at a high level to finish games. But yeah, I mean, I think now it's just a matter of getting the roster cohesion. It feels like the last three or so games, maybe even going back all the way four games, they've played a lot better. They lost the last two in the run before they got the win in the Nets game, but they were playing very good teams, the Jazz and the Suns, and they played them very competitively, which was a positive sign. And you really can't complain about this win. I texted Ricky and one of our other friends this during the game, but it really looked like the beautiful game in stretches for them with all those assists, the post ups, kick out, swing. And I even will say that, like, yeah, Kobe missed some reads, but I do think that when all he has to do is either shoot or swing the ball to the next guy over, like, that's a pretty good spot for him. I still don't think that he's, like, you know, probably going to live up to his draft slot. But if all you're asking him to do is, in the short term, is shoot open threes, beat guys on closeouts, and if he doesn't have the shot, swing it to the next guy, you know, that's trimming his debt. I guess I would say that's right-sizing him for his skill set and where he's at right now. And it seems like Billy is not really screwing around with the too much development stuff. And I don't actually think that that's a bad thing. Like, I think that guys learn and get better by building confidence through winning. I think that, like, there's probably a little bit too much emphasis on basketball Twitter about, like, just getting guys developmental minutes in regardless of the situation. And I think that playing within a role and figuring out how to do that and getting your confidence up from actually winning games, it just feels better, and you probably get more confidence from that than from playing a huge usage role and just getting stomped all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we saw just like earlier this season, the Bulls were trying the development stuff and it just was not going well. Like the young lineups were crap. Kobe at point guard was crap. And they're like, enough is enough. We need to start changing stuff up. And they moved Wendell and Kobe to the bench, and then they trade Wendell and make a big Vucevic trade. Now they're trying to win games. So they're not going to deal with, like, obviously there's still some development going on, but yeah. Like you mentioned, the role, smaller roles for, like smaller decision-making roles for Kobe, a smaller role in general for Lowry. I think probably will hopefully you maximize those guys in those smaller roles for right now, at least. Like I said, I think we're all kind of down on these guys just as like legit long-term pieces. But if like for right now, they're on this team playing these smaller bench roles and like just not having as much pressure on them to like be the main guys, probably is just much better for them right now.
And the one guy whose development matters more than anyone is Pat. And Pat was the starter the whole year. And I think, you know, by making this Vooch trade, you are making his life easier, which I think we've seen a little bit to this point. But I think it's going to continue to happen. And what Kevin was saying about Kobe living up to his draft slot, I don't even really care if he lives up to his draft slot at this point. I sort of just want him to be like a just decent third guard. Like, obviously, you're not taking a guy with the seventh pick thinking that that is going to be his ultimate ceiling. But, you know, at least just getting a solid player out of him would be really nice, especially with 2 years left on the rookie deal. Or you flip him. And I think that that's something that is going to continue to be a discussion because Arturis Karnišovas and Mark Eversley did not draft Kobe White. Kobe White doesn't seem to fit really seamlessly with Zach LaVine in the backcourt. So, you know, those are things we'll be talking about well into the offseason, I'm sure. And, you know, we'll see if Kobe White is still on this team when they open up training camp. But just for, like, this moment right now with the Bulls really doing everything they can to try to get into the play-in tournament, it looks like they're going to get in just because no one below them is threatening them. And then they're going to try to win. And I guess the way it goes is that so 7 and 8 play each other in the play-in tournament, and the winner is automatically in. And then 9 and 10 play each other, and the winner plays the loser of the other game. And then they have to win that game. So, you know, if you're in the 9 or 10 slot, the Bulls are 10 right now. Right now it would be, you know, the Celtics play the Knicks, and then the Bulls play the loser of that game to, you know, if they could beat the Pacers in the first game. So that's how the play-in tournament works this year. I think that, you know, it's going to be fun. And someone asked in the comments too, if you qualify for the playoffs via the play-in tournament, you're not in the lottery. But if you fail to make the playoffs despite making the play-in tournament, you're in the lottery. So that's going to be something for the Bulls too, considering they have the top 4 protected draft pick. But, you know, it's pretty clear that the Bulls want to make the playoffs this year, and they want to get some experience. And I think that the team remains half finished in a lot of ways because you added someone who is so ball dominant, has such a high usage rate in Vucevic in the middle of the year. It's going to take some time to figure out, but it was nice to see them not get their ass kicked tonight. I mean, you know, even if it's against sort of a weaker opponent, that's all right. So we got a question from Jeremy. Should we hit that in the chat?
We got a couple questions here. Let's start after a little higher from Uncle Stanley McGoober. And these all kind of play into each other. Would you rather the Bulls make the 6th seed and go straight to the Bucks or 7-8 and you get a fun play-in and then they get a fun matchup? Nuts matchup. I mean, I feel like you'd just rather stay out of the play-in. I guess if you do get in the play-in, there still is the outside chance where if you do blow it, you can still get the number one pick, I guess, in the top 3. So I guess ideally, though, with the way the Bulls are going, the direction they're going, it'd probably just be better to get in the playoffs and like get up to number 6, which like we talked, there are some just comments in here about getting up there. Like, I don't think it's that out of the question to do. I mean, they're 4 games out of the 6 right now. The Hornets just lost. They have no LaMelo Ball. They have no Gordon Hayward for like a month or two. The Celtics suck. The Knicks are kind of whatever. The Pacers suck and are hurt. So like, I don't think it's like that crazy for the, if you look at the next couple weeks, like the Bulls schedule is not that hard. Like this week at Toronto is just a disaster. They're totally cooked. And like Lowry and Van Vliet are out again now. And like Siakam's a disaster. Like their COVID issues, just their whole season has been a mess. And then like at Atlanta will be tough on Friday, second of a back-to-back. Atlanta on fire tonight in New Orleans. New Orleans apparently just loves giving up like historic 3-point shooting performances, and Atlanta's now up to the 4 seed. So that'll be a tough game. So, I mean, you figure you got to at least win one of those, but I mean, it's not like Atlanta's unbeatable. And then they got like the Timberwolves coming up on Sunday, and then they got like another Magic game. There's the Grizzlies mixed in there. So like the next couple of weeks, the Bulls can have a chance to move up the standings here. And, I mean, maybe get up to 8 or 7, or maybe even get up to 6, depending on if the Hornets can stay afloat or not. So like, I know the schedule then gets much tougher at the end of the year. This season is just so weird in general. Who knows at the end of the year, especially with these top teams, like, I mean, especially the top three are just like so far ahead of everybody else. Like, you do wonder like if they will rest guys and all that kind of stuff. And we've seen the Bulls get lucky in a few games here. Like all week, the Bulls will probably like be missing guys. I know the Hawks, even though they won today, they don't have John Collins for a while. DeAndre Hunter is out again. So like, and the Bulls are pretty relatively healthy. Like the Bulls have got like lately have actually been pretty lucky, I feel like, with their health. Their main guy, their best players have not missed any time. We've had obviously some like Kobe and like Lowry missing some time. That's not a huge deal in the grand scheme of things. So like the Bulls are in a spot where they could possibly make a run here. I'm not sure how high they'll actually get. They actually have to win these games, but especially with the way that they are starting to look just a little better in general. Like Kevin, you mentioned like they were competitive against the Suns and Jazz. I guess they were down big and they made it look a little closer thanks to some runs in the fourth quarter. But I mean, they were right there in the fourth quarter after those runs. So like, they have been a bit more competitive after that ugly Spurs game and the ugly Warriors game. So again, if they can kind of just take advantage of this softer schedule coming up here the next few weeks, they might be able to make things interesting with these goofy, terrible Eastern Conference standings.
The biggest thing is going to be getting LaVine back to playing at the level playing at in the first half of the season, because since the Vucevic trade, I think these are the numbers I have up now, he did miss a game in the last five. So this was the sixth game with Vucevic, I believe. And I just have the numbers coming into tonight's game. But since the Vucevic trade, he was shooting 40% from the field, 20% from three, 70% from the foul line. So, you know, anyone who's watched the games have just noticed that he's been hobbled tonight. Again, you know, he's gutting it out. He's playing hurt. He's doing the things that our dads love to see athletes do. But we need Zach LaVine to be healthy and playing at the top of his game if the Bulls are really going to make things interesting. Kevin, what's your sort of mindset in terms of the protected draft pick, playing to get into the playoffs, the playing in general? Sort of where's your head at with the current state of Bulls fandom as the season comes to the conclusion?
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I don't know if Kevin was with us there. Okay, well, if anyone else wants to...
Let's address Jeremy's question now. He says the question moving forward is obviously they're trying to be their best. Yep. Lacking big cap space, they're going to have to trade more picks, assets this offseason, next year to try and be an actually good team. Obviously hoping Pat gets good quickly, but Vooch timeline is long. So I mean, that just kind of goes into what we're talking about. Like they're trying to win now.
And, sorry about that, guys.
Oh, all good.
I dropped off my Wi-Fi because I'm walking to the store. But when in the hang up between the internet and my phone connection, I lost you right as Ricky was asking me a question. Sorry about that.
It's all good. I mean, yeah, just kind of addressing what I just the Jeremy question, just kind of where they're at, just where the Bulls are going, like right now, what they're trying to win. But obviously, like they're as Ricky has kind of said, they're like kind of half finished. Where do they go for the rest of the season here? Like, what's your view on them, like, going to win games and then just like moving forward? Like, where, how do they like take this next step? Because obviously the cap space thing, we'll see how that shakes out. We've talked about like the Lonzo Ball stuff. Like, will they have to make more trades to like to actually become like a legit contender here? Just like, where, I guess, where do you stand with just like what they're trying to do the rest of the season and then how they like take that next step moving forward?
Yeah, the one thing I want to say on this is that, and I listened to Mark's podcast. He had Fred and Doug on. We got Mark in the room right now. That was a really good episode, Mark. I thought it was hilarious and really good discussion. But Doug was really down on the Vucevic trade, right? And I think that's totally a defensible position. When I was doing the trade grades for SB Nation, I gave the Magic an A and the Bulls a B for the trade, just because I thought, you know, for the Magic to get two first-round picks and to get Carter, that's great value for Vucevic, who's already 30. Obviously, the Magic weren't really going to be building towards anything, and those Bulls picks could be decent picks, especially this year. Who knows? So I thought that was, good from the Magic's perspective. But here's the thing from the Bulls' perspective. Look at their last eight first-round picks, post-Jimmy Butler, before Pat. It's a lot of busts, dude. It's eight busts. So Garpak's obviously left the franchise in a pretty vulnerable position. And I just think that, like, even if the Bulls had kept the pick this year, didn't have Vooch, so what's your grand plan? That, like, the ninth pick in the draft is going to save the franchise? Like, of course, any draft pick is sort of a lottery ticket, and you kind of give yourself the shot at potentially getting someone who could be really good long term. But we've done that for a number of years. Like, Lauri Markkanen didn't save the franchise. Carter didn't. Kobe didn't. So Pat looks pretty good. I don't want to crown him yet just because, you know, there was a point where I thought Carter was going to be a no-brainer, above average starter for this team, and that never happened. But I just think that, like, to bemoan the loss of the draft pick when you, at the end of the day, it's like the ninth or tenth pick in the draft, you already got a 19-year-old and a 20-year-old and Pat and Kobe. I'm just not crying about losing that pick if it lands in that range, and it's protected if in the best case scenario where it jumps up. So that's just kind of my thought on it. I do think the Bulls gave up a lot, but what was exciting to me about the trade is that it signals it just a general aggressiveness to team building that Garpak's never considered. So I think that, like, viewing the Bulls right now as being like, well, they need one more guy. Who's their one more guy? I really think that's a narrow-minded view of it. Like, they could do anything. They could trade Vucevic. They could sign Zach and flip him. They could basically do anything. I don't think that they're just necessarily going to be totally locked in to what they have, right? So that's what was exciting to me about the move.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would agree with pretty much everything you said there, Ricky. The only thing that I would say is that I don't really I don't think that they actually sent out that much, frankly. I had gotten to the point where I was not much of a Wendell guy. He's like a very easily replaceable quality center in the league. Like, outside of your top, like, five maybe centers in the league, most of them aren't really difference makers. And I think Vooch is like probably, it's like probably like the Mendoza line. I think Vucevic is kind of like that line, right? Like, I think he makes a difference, but like most centers below him are not meaningfully different. And I think that it was, I struggled to see where Wendell was going to be an above average starting center on, on Zach's timeline, really. And then the picks, you know, they got an all-star, and I know people like to poo-poo Vucevic's all-stars, but, like, the guy is a beast. He was playing with, like, nobody down there in Orlando and consistently just, like, dominating teams. He killed the Nets by himself when he was on Orlando, and then he did it again, admittedly, against a lesser Nets team this time. But, like, he's a really, really good player, and picks that are top four protected – almost every great player that gets drafted in the draft, with a few exceptions, obviously, but those are lottery tickets anyway, are not going to be all-stars. So I just don't think that it's actually that much to give up. And I know it sounds like a lot, but, like, I just don't value what those assets were going to be. And that's not because I don't think that Karnišovas is, like, a talented drafter. I mean, I think Denver has one of the best draft histories in the league going back the last decade or so, however long he was there. And, you know, I don't, you know, you can't, it's hard to parcel out credit, but, you know, he was at least part of those decisions. And I just, I think that, you know, the aggressiveness, what the aggressiveness really signaled to me was that they were done trying to behave like a small market team. Because like that's like building everything through the draft and just praying that like continually being shitty and being a lottery team is like gonna land you Cade Cunningham or Zion or Luka or whatever, like it never happened. Like there were like franchise changing talents in all of the last four drafts since the Jimmy Butler trade, and the Bulls didn't get one of them. So it's just like, what are your actual advantages as a franchise? Like, yeah, everybody can play the draft game, and that's why the draft game sucks, because anybody, including all the small market teams, can play it. The Bulls are in a position where they can play a game that only some franchises can play. They are a huge market. They are a legacy market in terms of the Jordan era. And I think that, like, I don't know, I this is maybe like a long shot conspiracy theory, but like, I want to believe that Michael Reinsdorf saw the Last Dance and was like, hey, we used to be relevant. Like, maybe we should try that again. You know, I don't know. But it just definitely feels like that's the direction that they're going, is like, hey, this is like a great market. We should build a really good team here and get people to come want to play here.
For sure.
Yeah.
And I think that also just like the aggressiveness they show just – to me signals that they're not going to be locked into this. Like if they think that, you know, this doesn't have enough upside, I think that they're just going to continue to try to gain every advantage that they can. And, you know, I mentioned earlier that I think that they should try to get back into the draft. They also are going to have a decently high second round pick. You know, these are things that you can do to try to add young talent. You can get a guy, you know, who flamed out somewhere else, you know, looks better on a second team. So yeah, they're going to have some opportunities to be better. So I think that like, it's the wrong way of looking at it to be like, well, LaVine and Vucevic are two of the worst all-stars in the league. And you know, the team is just ultimately going to have a ceiling of the second round. It's like, you don't know, man, if you're sitting here 3 years from now and they've somehow landed a superstar free agent or swung a big trade.
Jokic.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, if that happens, I think it's going to be way, way, way too early to grade this trade until you see how the franchise is perceived over the next few years, right? So that's my two cents on
that. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just nice to like be semi-relevant again and just be trying to win games. It was, they've just been so bad. They've been so shitty since they tried to gym in. Hopefully they can, like I said, start stacking some wins here over these next couple weeks. So even though we have just been shitting like on the draft right now, I did kind of want to talk some draft today, just with the NCAA tournament finishing up here. Obviously, we saw some really high level play. I mean, Baylor just absolutely whooped Gonzaga's ass after that incredible Gonzaga UCLA game. Baylor just ran roughshod through the Final Four. So I guess, Ricky, as the draft guy, I know Kevin, you're kind of into the draft as well. That's not as much for me. I did want to talk about at least, obviously, the Bulls will only have the draft pick if it is in the top, if they get in the play-in and then lose and then get in the top four. But I guess just, Ricky, any of your just thoughts on draft thoughts from the NCAA tournament? Obviously, we saw Jalen Suggs, the other Gonzaga guys. We had, like, Corey Kispert, Baylor. I know, like, a lot of people are hyping up Davion Mitchell now. And then there's with Jared Butler. So I guess just your top takeaways from what we saw in the NCAA tournament with some of the draft stuff, and especially in the Final Four that just happened.
For sure. I did a mock draft today on SB Nation, so if you want to check that out, go for it. I think that, you know, this was sort of a disappointing NCAA tournament from a draft pick perspective, because nobody really moved way up based on their performance, and a lot of guys who were in position to do that kind of had disappointing runs. Like, I think the top five is sort of solidified, right? With Cade's going to be number one. I think Evan Mobley's number two, but you can make a case for Suggs at number two. And then you have Jalen Green, who you could probably make a case for him at number two if you want to. His range is like 2 to 4. And then you have Kuminga. Those guys are almost certainly going to be the first five picks. Who goes number six, I think, is going to be really fascinating. And as I alluded to, nobody really gained any positive momentum during this tournament. Arkansas went to the Elite Eight, but they were better with Moses Moody out of the game sometimes. Like, Moody did, he had two bad games in the Sweet 16 and the Elite Eight. That's the guy I think I favor right now at number six, but you know, he didn't give himself any positive momentum going into the pre-draft process. Keon Johnson in Tennessee. Tennessee got absolutely smoked in their first game by Oregon State, so he's out right away. Scotty Barnes, I wrote this in my mock draft today. Scotty Barnes had 18 points, 6 rebounds, and 9 assists total in 3 games. So, you know, he's sort of a jack-of-all-trades type, really long defender who can pass a little bit. He's interesting, but, you know, I question how much he's going to be able to score at the NBA level, and he didn't really put those concerns to bed during Florida State's run to the Sweet 16. And yeah, even a guy like Kai Jones, Franz Wagner was horrible in the Michigan State game. He airballed a potential game-winning 3, shot 1-10 from the field. He was someone who I thought could maybe get up into that 6 overall spot. So from that perspective, I don't think we learned too much about the draft order. I think the top 5 is the top 5. 6-14 is going to be really, really fluid. And, you know, as a Bulls fan who just saw the team trade the pick, I'm looking at some of these guys and I'm like, man, I'm not going to be missing out on this pick too much this year. Like, if you're talking about Jalen Johnson from Duke, he's really talented, I think, and there's a chance that he could be good. Some people have compared him to a poor man's Ben Simmons. He's not a very good shooter. He likes to play in the open floor. He likes to handle. He's big and fast, and he's someone who's intriguing for sure, but I'm not feeling great about taking him or Barnes. You know, Zaire Williams is another guy who I think is going to be like 3 or 4 years away from contributing. He could be a lottery pick. Franz didn't look good. I don't love Bouknight. Sharif Cooper's interesting, but he's someone who has pretty obvious strengths and weaknesses to me and probably isn't going to be an immediate impact guy. So especially looking at this range of the draft, I don't know. I'm not super upset the Bulls are going to be missing out on a pick this year just because I think all these guys have some pretty big question marks in general. And then I don't really see a ton of clean fits into the Bulls. In terms of the game, I had written so much about Gonzaga as potentially being an all-time great team. That's what happens when you go 31-0 and you have a roster that has, you know, an All-American at guard, forward, and at center. They also had a fourth All-American, Joel Ayayi, who could potentially be someone the Bulls look for with a second-round pick. He was a French guard, 6'5", fourth year in the program as a redshirt junior. Gonzaga developed him slowly. He ended up being like probably the best fourth option in college basketball this year for sure. But, you know, despite all Gonzaga's talent and despite their great, you know, resume during the season, I thought the better team won. Baylor just looked phenomenal. Yeah. I thought Baylor was a really bad matchup for Gonzaga, mostly because Drew Timmy, the Gonzaga center, absolutely could not defend a high ball screen. He was switching on to Davion Mitchell and Jared Butler. They were just making him pay. Baylor was doing a great job collapsing the defense, kicking the ball out, getting wide open, catch and shoot threes a lot of the times that Gonzaga had not been surrendering most of this year. It also helped that Baylor was just on fire. Point range. I mean, they hit, I think, something like 45% of their threes for the game. Gonzaga started 1-for-8 from 3. Baylor also gashed him on the offensive glass. So, yeah, dude, Baylor's a kick-ass team. I wrote a love letter to this Baylor team that's going to be publishing tomorrow on SBNation.com, almost 2,000 words. But essentially, they just went 52-6 over 2 years. They would have been a number one seed in the tournament last year when they were probably the second best team in the country behind Devon Dotson in Kansas, the current Bulls point guard. So totally elite team. I mean, when you do it for 2 years with the same core, everyone always talks about how you need guards in March. Well, they had 3 kick-ass guards with Butler, Teague, and Mitchell. They had some pretty interesting front court guys with JTT, with Matthew Mayer. They hit more threes than hit a greater percentage of their threes than any team in the country. They're a 41% 3-point shooting team on the year. So, yeah, man, they checked every box. They kicked ass all year. I think the best team won the title. And, you know, it was a little disappointing, I think, that it wasn't a close game because I really thought that should have been like an instant classic game. But Baylor came out and they fucking ran him off the floor. They just looked so locked in. Scott Drew absolutely had them ready to play. Mark Few had to go to a zone early in the game, which Gonzaga had barely played all year. So that was a straight up ass whooping. Best team won the title. And yeah, in terms of like the best college basketball teams I've seen in the last few years, I think that Baylor and Gonzaga were both two of the 10 best of the last 10 years, probably. Like, I'm taking 2012 Kentucky and 2015 Kentucky, the teams led by Anthony Davis and Karl Towns, over those squads. I'm taking 2018 Villanova over those squads. But otherwise, I mean, both of these teams were absolute fucking powerhouses. This Gonzaga team was better than the squad that lost in the title game in 2017, and that was a great team with Nigel Williams-Goss and Zach Collins and my boy Karnowski. So two great teams, high-level game. Baylor whooped their ass. It would have been fun to see a best-of-five series, best-of-three series even, but I do think the best team won.
I will also have to ask you about AO, since he declared for the draft today. And obviously Illinois went out very sadly against Loyola. Where do you think, like, do you think he would make sense for the Bulls in the early second? Like, do you think he'll go in the first? What is your take on my guy AO?
Yeah, I don't have IO as a first round pick. To me, I think it's close. I think, you know, he could have if Illinois had a big run. Now, I don't really think like a tournament run should matter too much in terms of shooting up your draft board, but it just does happen to matter quite a bit every single year. And IO was arguably the best junior in the country besides for the two Baylor guards, besides for Jared Butler all year. So I don't love him from a draft prospect perspective. He has great size at 6'5", but he's just not a plus athlete. So that's like the first handicap on him. I don't really see him being able to create advantage situations, going to the basket, collapsing a defense. Like, I just don't really think he's particularly quick enough to do that. Also, while he did shoot 40% from three this year, it was on low volume. He wasn't a good shooter before this year. Teams are going to go under. They're going to dare him to beat them with his jump shot. And like I said, I don't think the jump shot's good enough. I don't think his quickness is going to be good enough, you know, to beat a defense going under screens. But his sort of avenue for success, I think, would be becoming a guy who could play a little bit more off the ball. He was very on ball dominant in the college level, but he does have good size, right? At 6'5". So just becoming a really solid defensive player, it's tough to do that when you don't have super elite athletic traits. But I think if he could just be sort of a low maintenance pro who contributes a little bit on both ends, gives you another 6'5 ball handler, and ideally can stick a little bit defensively, I think that's probably IO's best path. I would put his range from 25 to 40. So, you know, potentially the Bulls could get him in the second round, but, you know, he wouldn't be my favorite pick. I love IO as a kid. I did a big feature on him at SB Nation. I talked to him. He was awesome to talk to. I talked to his dad, who was great, his high school coach. But to me, not my favorite guard prospect in this draft. Still hell of a college player. He's going to make a lot of money playing basketball, and really all you can ask for is the opportunity to prove you belong in the NBA, and I think he'll get that opportunity.
Yeah, that sounds totally fair to me. I mean, obviously I watched a lot of basically every Illinois game this year, and he was awesome, clutch player, except for that last game. But yeah, I mean, definitely saw those flaws. I do have questions about his jumper too at the next level, so we'll see. I obviously am hoping for the best for him. I will be rooting for him and hopefully does well. Kevin, do you have any draft takes, any tournament stuff that you have any thoughts on? Otherwise, we'll probably wrap it up here.
No, I didn't watch nearly enough college basketball. I'd be basically being a total fraud if I tried to have draft picks right now.
That's me as well. That's why I'd leave this stuff to Ricky. I let him cook on that, and usually I just shut my mouth and stuff like that.
I just listened to Ricky and Brian Schroeder, and then I pass those opinions off to my friends that are even more casual than me, and it makes me sound smart, so it's great.
Perfect. Fair enough. Yeah. Okay. I think we'll wrap it up here. We've been going for a good 45 minutes. So, get good Bulls win tonight. They got two in a row after a 6-game losing streak. They're 21-28, still in the number 10 spot, but they're now just, again, a game behind the Pacers. They got the Raptors up next on Thursday, and it sounds like the Raptors are going to be very shorthanded again. Just saw a tweet from with a quote from Nick Nurse saying he's not too hopeful about getting bodies back for their game on Thursday against the Bulls. So that's probably no Lowry, no Fred VanVleet. I don't know if they have other guys missing too, but I know those two guys mainly. So this is, again, this is another game where the Bulls should take care of business and basically beat their ass. I know they still have Siakam and like OG, but I mean, again, they've just, Siakam's been kind of a mess. The COVID thing has just been messing with them all season. They just seem like totally beaten down. So again, it's a game they should win, and they got the Hawks after that, second of a back-to-back. That game will be really tough. I think this will only be the second time the Bulls play the Hawks after that first, that opening night, just totally, total disaster against the Hawks. So it will be very interesting to see them face the Hawks again on Friday night. They will, the Hawks, I believe, will not have John Collins or Hunter, as I mentioned, but still Trae Young, Gallinari, Kevin Herter, and some of these other guys. I keep forgetting they traded for Lou Williams and that they have Lou Williams now. So he's obviously a dangerous player. So that should be a good game. The Hawks are the number four seed. So these next two games, Eastern Conference teams, the Bulls should beat the Raptors, and the Hawks should be a fun one on Friday night. And that will wrap it up here for us, Cash Considerations. Thanks, as always, to everybody listening, for asking questions and commenting. Always great to get everybody's input. As always, shout out to the Blue Wire Network and all the great Blue Wire pods across the network. I saw that we're doing some cool thing with that Ken Griffey Jr. coming up here, so that's pretty dope. Ken Griffey Jr. is awesome, so that's sweet. Not totally sure when we'll be back with you guys, but probably sometime after these next couple games. So thanks again, Kevin, also for coming on. And then for Jason and Ricky, this has been Cash Considerations, HI Wolves Podcast. Talk to you guys next time.